Hello and welcome to the reading of the Yuma Sun. This is Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds of Arizona Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster. Today I'll be reading some of the following articles: Resolving the Future of the Colorado River, Yuma Ties Heat Record as APS Customers Set New Peak Energy Demand, Fuerza Local Program Highlights Beneficial Impact on Small Businesses. Our first article today by Alex Ibrahimi, Sun staff writer, Yuma Ties Heat Record as APS Customers Set New Peak Energy Demand. Yuma's sweltering weather and Arizona's rising electricity use made history Thursday, August 7th, as the city tied a 1962 high of 114 degrees and Arizona Public Service customers set a new all-time peak demand of 8,631 megawatts. It was third time this summer and the third consecutive year that APS customers broke the record for peak demand, the period when electricity use is at its highest. 1 megawatt powers about 160 homes. The previous day, August 6th, Yuma reached 114 degrees, just shy of the city's 115-degree record, which was set in 1995, according to the National Weather Service meteorologist Mark O'Malley. APS reported Wednesday's demand hit 8,534 megawatts, a record until Thursday's total surpassed it. Arizona's recent peak demand records, August 7th, 2025, 8,631 megawatts. August 6th, 2025, 8,534 megawatts. July 9th, 2025, 8,527 megawatts. August 4th, 2024, 8,210 megawatts. July 20th, 2023, 8,162 megawatts. APS attributes the surge in demand to extreme heat, population growth, new business, and a strong economy. The utility invests more than $2 billion annually in system upgrades, operations, and maintenance to serve 1.4 million homes and businesses in 11 of Arizona's 15 counties. We have set three peak energy demand records so far this summer, which emphasizes the importance of maintaining reliability through extreme weather and growing energy use in Arizona, APS President and CEO Ted Geisler said. A balanced energy mix with nuclear, natural gas, coal, solar, wind, and energy storage all play a role in delivering reliable, affordable service to our customers. The Arizona Corporation Commission said Thursday that APS, Salt River Project, and Tucson Electric Power all exceeded their 2025 peak demand forecasts this week. Combined, the three utilities have the capacity to produce more than 24,000 megawatts to meet daily summer needs. To prepare for future growth, APS plans to add 9,805 megawatts of solar, wind, energy storage, and natural gas resources, more than 90% from carbon-free sources by 2028. The company is also participating in the Desert Southwest Expansion Project, expected to be completed by late 2029, to increase natural gas supply for summer peak needs. Tips for saving on summer cooling. APS recommends customers compare rate plans and consider budget billing to avoid seasonal bill swings. Pre-cool homes before 4 p.m. and raise thermostats during peak hours. Raise thermostats by a few degrees to save 2-3% on cooling costs per degree. Join APS Cool Rewards or APS Peak Solutions to earn bill credits for reducing usage. And finally, close curtains during the day. Use ceiling fans running counterclockwise. Yuma Ties Heat Record as APS Customers Set New Peak Energy Demand was written by Alex Ibrahimi, Sun staff writer. Cesar Nioy of Baja El Sol writes, Fuerza local program highlights beneficial impact on small businesses. Dateline, San Luis. The Fuerza local program has had a positive impact on small businesses in this community, according to the San Luis Economic Development Department. Recently, 11 businesses graduated from the program's first cohort brought to the area by the nonprofit organization Local First Arizona, with funding from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Business Development Grants Program, totaling $60,000. Local First Arizona is a nonprofit organization dedicated to fostering economic and community development throughout the state. It runs the Fuerza Local Business Accelerator Program in several regions of Arizona. Last week, Armando Esparza, Director of Economic Development for San Luis, reported to the City Council the program's impact on the participating businesses from the first cohort, which began classes in February and concluded last week. We had strong participation in the first cohort. 11 businesses graduated. 6 existing ones, 4 new ones, and one that was previously unregistered but was able to formally establish itself through the program. The first cohort represented businesses from 6 industries. The total of $62,000 was invested in capital, with 11 scholarships awarded to the same number of businesses. The program supported the creation and retention of 34 jobs and offered over 560 hours of instruction. Esparza added that the involvement of these first businesses in Fuerza Local attracted $91,000 in investment through loans, savings, and lines of credit, with one business securing a loan during the program period. He detailed the impact on employment included 26 jobs retained and 8 new jobs created by participating businesses. The official explained that participants were able to improve their skills in accounting and taxes, human resources, access to capital and finance, marketing and social media use, customer service, and business planning. It's amazing what you've brought to the community. Many people don't understand the concept that small businesses are the backbone of the country's economic growth, not big business or major investments, emphasized Major Nieves Riddell in response to the Fuerza Local report. We hope San Luis residents will go out and support these businesses. These individuals are making great efforts and sacrifice. The second cohort of the Fuerza Local program began on Tuesday, with 12 businesses taking part in a 17-week course supported by the remaining $30,000 in USDA grant funds. Cesar Nioya Baja El Sol wrote, Fuerza Local program highlights beneficial impact on small businesses. Josh Bootson, Sun staff writer, wrote, Resolving the Future of the Colorado River. The Colorado River has long been the lifeblood of the American Southwest, supplying water to 7 U.S. states, 2 Mexican states, 40 million people, and millions of acres of farmland. But the historic agreement that has governed its use, the 1922 Colorado River Compact, is nearing a critical deadline, and the river's flow steadily shrinking. The region faces an urgent challenge: how to fairly share less water among all the users. The original compact divided the river's flow between the upper basin states, which include Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming, and the lower basin states, including Arizona, California, and Nevada, allocating each basin up to 7.5 million acre feet annually in separate agreements. An acre foot equals the amount of water needed to cover 1 acre of land to the depth of 1 foot, enough to supply about 2 households for a year. But the agreement were made during an unusually wet period, granting more water than the river regularly provides. Since 2000, a prolonged drought combined with rising agricultural and urban demands has depleted the river's flow. This led to the creation of the interim guidelines in 2007 to manage shortages and a drought contingency plan signed in 2019. Both expire on December 31st, 2026. Without a new agreement in place for 2027 and beyond, the region faces an uncertain future. Seven states, alongside tribal nations and Mexican counterparts, must come together to redefine water allocations that support communities, farms, wildlife, and ecosystems. In the West, water has always been the number one reason to fight, and it's still a fight, said Jonathan Lines, Yuma County Supervisor and Board Chairman of Arizona's Water Infrastructure Finance Authority. The basin states need to unite and find a solution to this challenge sooner rather than later. The federal government is applying pressure as well. The U.S. Department of the Interior has warned that if a draft agreement isn't presented by November 11, 2025, federal officials may step in and impose a solution. If the basin states don't act, the feds will come in. People don't know the river or the local needs and mandate a directive, Lines warned. One major sticking point remains, the division between the upper and lower basin states. Unlike the South, where water is measured through dams, much of the water used in the North is drawn directly from river flow, making it harder to track and allocate. We're running up against a wall for this, agreed Yuma Mayor Douglas Nichols, but he also believes the basin states may earn an extension if they can show progress on a few key points. Other challenges include outdated allocations, groundwater depletion, water transfers, and a priority system that often favors some users over others. The basin states must decide how to share less water equitably, a task complicated by interconnected decisions and competing interests. We all want to avoid lawsuits. Everyone agrees the river has less water. But the details are complicated, said Megan Scott, attorney specializing in water law. Every choice impacts something else, so until we find the first decisions, it's hard to find full agreement. Despite the hurdles, all of the basin states are still at the table, Scott added, which is a positive sign. Efforts to address drought have included historic investments from the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, which together provides $15.4 billion to enhance drought resilience in the West, over $5 billion targeting the Colorado River projects. In December 2024, the Bureau of Reclamation proposed five potential strategies for managing the river after 2026. These strategies range from reverting to previous guidelines to prioritizing critical infrastructure and promoting cooperation across the basin. We've worked hard to bring stakeholders together, including tribal governments for the first time, said former Bureau of Reclamation Commissioner Camille Tutin. These proposals offer a responsible path forward. I'm confident we can meet the river's needs for the future. As negotiations continue, all eyes remain on the basin states. The decision made in the coming year will shape the Southwest's water future for cities, farms, wildlife, and the millions that also depend upon the Colorado River. Josh Bootson, Sun staff writer, penned Resolving the Future of the Colorado River. James Gilbert of the Sun staff writes Border Patrol agent sees marijuana handgun from teenagers on I-10. Dateline, Ehrenberg, Arizona. Two teenagers were arrested Tuesday after U.S. Border Patrol agents discovered more than 8 pounds of marijuana, hundreds of THC vape pens, and a handgun during a traffic stop at Interstate 10. Blythe Station agents with the Yuma sector stopped the vehicle near Ehrenberg and found a 17-year-old and a 19-year-old, both U.S. citizens, transporting the drugs and a weapon. The seizure included more than 1,200 THC vape pens and more than 300 marijuana cigarettes, in addition to the bulk marijuana. The handgun narcotics and both suspects were turned over to the La Paz County Sheriff's Office. The teens face state charges for possession of narcotics and a firearm. The incident is part of an ongoing enforcement effort in the Yuma sector, which the Border Patrol says plays a key role in interdicting narcotics and weapons along the Arizona highways. James Gilbert, Sunstaff writer, penned Border Patrol agents seize marijuana handgun from teenagers on I-10. James Gilbert, Sunstaff writer, writes, Arizona unveils secure anonymous voting system for military overseas voters. Arizona has launched a new voting system aimed at making ballots for military and overseas voters more secure and anonymous and accessible, the Secretary of State announced on Friday. The system called Enhanced Ballot is being piloted in the special general election for Congressional District 7 and will be used statewide in future elections. It's designed for voters covered by the Uniformed and Overseas Citizens Absentee Voting Act, known as UOCAVA or UOCAVA. That includes members of the armed forces and U.S. citizens living abroad. This new system is a leap forward in ensuring that every eligible voter, no matter where they are in the world, can easily cast a ballot that is both secure and truly anonymous, Secretary of State Adrian Fontes said. For years, UOCAVA voters in Arizona had to waive their right to a secret ballot due to the way their return ballots were processed. The new system eliminates that requirement while also removing the need for ballot duplication, reducing the risk of overvotes, and enabling voters to complete the process entirely from a personal device. Voters can still choose to print and mail their ballots. The pilot program will impact only a limited number of voters in the upcoming special election, allowing state and county officials to test the system's performance and make adjustments before wider use. All ballots will still be processed on paper using logic and accuracy tested tabulators. The Secretary of State's office received a $2 million federal grant in 2023 from the Department of Defense's Federal Voting Assistance Program to implement the system. Vendor-enhanced voting was chosen for its security credentials, including RabbitV certification from the Center for Internet Security and SOC 2 Type 2 certification, which verifies strong controls over security, confidentiality, and privacy. This is an upgrade we've been working toward for 20 years, Fontes said. We've been doing electronic delivery and return for nearly two decades, and this system finally brings the increased security and anonymity our voters deserve. According to the FVAP, roughly three-quarters of the 1.3 million active duty service members are eligible to vote under the UOCAVA provision, but only 26% voted in 2022. State officials hope the new system will boost participation. James Gilbert of the Sun-Staff wrote, Arizona unveils secure anonymous voting system for military overseas voters. Alex Ibrahimi writes, comings and goings, Country Club RV, Divine Home Care, Happy Track, and others. Country Club RV at 6651 East Gila Ridge Road has closed after 12 years of selling and servicing RVs. Well before it was ever Country Club RV, owners Brent and Laura Dana first opened Country Club Honda in 1989, carrying Honda, Mitsubishi, Suzuki, Daewoo, along with a dollar rent-a-car franchise. They eventually sold the business in 2010 with hopes of retirement, which lasted about 2 years. In 2013, Country Club RV opened. After losing Brent to cancer in 2016, Miss Dana decided to continue to keep the business open because she enjoyed the business and giving back to the community. Dana's daughter, Farah Gebhardt, told the Yuma Sun, in the last year, she has decided it is time to retire, and the decision was made to close the doors. It wasn't an easy decision because she cares deeply about her staff. Many have been with her since the beginning. While the family behind Country Club RV is sad to see the chapter close, they are grateful for all the years they have been able to serve the Yuma community and proud to have fulfilled the RV dream of their customers. The RV lifestyle is such a fantastic way to see the country and connect with your family and friends. In this day and age, everyone is on their electronic devices, so traveling and unplugging is the best. We have made so many friends over the years. Customers have truly become family. We are stopped all the time by people that brought their first car from us in 1990 to now retiring and buying their first trailer. Divine Home Care is a new business founded by Glenda Lopez, who has spent 13 years in the medical field and has a master's degree in social work. With her seasoned background in hospital and hospice care, Lopez decided it was time to open an agency of her own to provide care for clients. "Our big kicker is home care," Lopez said. "We do a little bit of everything." Services of Divine Home Care are 24/7 and include personal care, companionship, housekeeping, yard work, and grocery shopping, along with range of motion exercises, grooming, meal prepping, transportation to medical appointments, nail appointments, haircut appointments, and so much more. We also have the medical social work package. If they were placements and the family was not here to tour our facilities, I would tour them for them. We do powers of attorney, we do funeral arrangements and life planning, pretty much everything. For more information on Divine Home Care, call 928-509-5964. Happy Track, the over 20-year-old motocross facility located at 13,000 South Carlotta Avenue, opens Saturday under the new ownership of Jaron Ostberg and Bobby Lee. Motivated by their kids' racing and lifelong involvement in motocross, new owners Ostberg and Lee saw an opportunity to build something bigger. Previously, Happy Track was open only sporadically, but the new team wants to make it more consistent and community-focused. Their vision includes redesigning the track, building a regional race circuit with other nearby tracks, attracting out-of-town riders, providing more open days and structured hours starting October 3rd with morning and evening sessions to beat the heat, creating social impact programs like Sponsorship Initiative, where companies can adopt a kid and help cover riding costs for the underprivileged youth. "We're trying to look forward," Ostberg explained. "We want to get the less fortunate kids out of the system and have them come out and get away from that environment." For more information on Happy Track and sponsorship opportunities, call Ostberg at 619-735-1545. The doors of Yuma's Hooters, 1519 Yuma Palms Parkway, officially closed today after 9 years of operation. Allie Hansen, Arizona Director of Marketing for Restaurants of America, which owns Hooters, Lily Ricci's, The Moon Saloon, and Bourbon Brews and Burgers, confirmed the news but could not provide any additional information at this time regarding the future of the location. However, plans are in the works, and the Yuma Sun will be sure to provide an update as soon as it is made possible. This article, written by Alex Ibrahimi of the Sun staff, Comings and Goings, Country Club, RV, Divine Home Care, Happy Track, and others. And now we turn to The Editor's Notebook by Mara Knab. Pages offering glimpses of the past. I love looking back at history and imagining what life looked like in the years past. The weekly pages from the past, published every week in the Yuma Sun, offers us a glimpse of life in Yuma years ago. Another recent page from the past, this one from 1972, had a hospital report that included the names of everyone who was admitted and released from the hospital. It even included their home addresses. Can you imagine that? It would never fly today. We would never print a patient's home address nowadays, mostly for security reasons, but no one blinked an eye back then. Of course, in that era, humans probably knew everyone that lived in their neighborhood. In the early days, the Yuma Sun used to run divorces, marriage license, bankruptcies, and more. No more. The only ones we see published are births, and proud parents still clip or take screenshots or photos of the page and send it to their relatives. The paper had a society column that reported when college kids from Yuma were visiting their parents. And the Crim's Corner reported about local high school parties and things like what was served, punch, and cookies. It's a reminder of how perspectives change as time goes by. What was acceptable in the past might not be acceptable any longer, yet it was perfectly normal in those days. There is no shortage of pages from the past, as the Yuma Sun has been in publication since 1872, when it was known as the Yuma Sentinel. Did you know that the Yuma Sun is the second oldest organization in operation in Yuma County? We're only second to the sheriff's office. It was called the Arizona Sentinel because this was known as the Arizona City, and Arizona was not a state yet. It was a territory. It became the Sun in 1896, the Yuma Daily Sun in 1935, and more recently the Yuma Sun. Yet longtime Yumans still refer to it as the Yuma Daily Sun. I'm proud of our history. I always tell people that we're much more than a news source. We are a historical institution. We have recorded Yuma County's history for 153 years. That's quite impressive. This article was written by Mara Knab. Pages offer glimpses of the past. Turning to the Yuma Sun obituaries, Jose Rivas Arias, 61, San Bernardino, California. Glenn Richard Brandenberger, 45, from Yuma. Jose M. Castellanos, 35, from Yuma. Rosa V. Corona, 91, from Yuma. Deborah Karen Crithards, 61, from Welton. Martin Fiscal Galaviz, 60, from Yuma. Timothy L. Hamilton, 64, from Yuma. Sebastiano Vincenzo Pepper Patane, 92, from Yuma. Sharon R. Roach, 81, from Yuma. Sun Sounds of Arizona wishes to express its condolences to the friends and family members of their loved ones. Turning to the weather for the next few days, for today, Monday, August 11th, we're going to have a high of 112 degrees, a low of 85. It will be sunny and it will be dry. Tomorrow, Tuesday the 12th, we'll have a high of 112 degrees, a low of 85. It will be mostly sunny with a 1% chance for rain. On Wednesday, it'll be 110 for the high, 85 for the low. Again, it will be sunny and dry. On Thursday, it becomes a little cooler, with the high being only 108 degrees, the low 84, mostly sunny, a 1% chance for rain. Friday, it'll get cooler yet at 105 for the high, 82 for the low. It'll be sunny with a 2% chance for rain. And on Saturday, the high will be 104 degrees, 78 degrees for the low. It will be sunny with a 1% chance for rain. And that's your weather forecast for the coming week. Thank you all for listening to the reading of the Yuma Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Stay healthy, everyone. Be well. Be happy. Bye-bye.